time for Lickin' On Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Lickin' On Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's your host of Lickin' On Lending, David Lickin.
Let's begin.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you live with us on Monday, the 21st of August. We are excited to be here. Again, this podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals. We're so grateful to have you as our listener. Again, our commitment is to bring you timely information in an audio format that you can listen to anytime and anywhere. Well, I'll say a special thank you to our sponsors. Byte Software does a great job of bringing you together with a really robust LOS ecosystem that is a full enterprise version of their software. We're looking at some of the biggest companies. A lot of people say, Byte, wasn't that small company? Not anymore. They handle small companies, startups. They're doing a lot of those, but they are handling some of the largest mortgage companies out there. CMG, you look at Atlantic Bay Mortgage, just to name two. There's also, I'm thinking our friends at North Point Bank uses the system. I could go on and on. There's a lot of the top companies in the nation using Byte Software. Encourage you to check it out. Look at what they have and talk to some of their happy clients. Go onto their website, and you can go to their website by going to our website, Lickin' On Lending, and check out each one of our sponsors. Also, special thank you to Finastra, the complete applications and work through a workflow directly from their Fusion Mortgage Bot system. It's really a positive system, a great system that allows you to work in a cohesive, integrated, fully integrated manner, and it has all the APIs with open architecture, which means you can, for a very, just the effort to connect to the system, you can integrate all the other various systems that you have. Also, Total Expert. Again, they have built-in customer journeys. What that means is they have created a customer journey where they're communicating to your customer and they are going in and being able to connect you up right away with the customer. Also, Candor Technology, if you're bringing one of our sponsors. Again, the mortgage loan fulfillment solution that they have is a patent automated decision engine paired with Candor fulfillment experts leveraging their lean manufacturing methods. You got to check out what Candor can do, not only just for underwriting, but also all the way through to delivery of the loan. If you're buying loans, selling loans, running through your Candor system, it'll just identify any manufacturing defects and also identify the system process by which you do it. Also, Simple Nexus, we're grateful to have them as a sponsor. Listen to the interview we did with Andrea Lightfoot. Also, the Mortgage Bankers Association of America, Lenders One, the Mortgage Collaborative. Woohoo! David Kittle's here with us from TMC, as well as Knowledge Coop, Mobility MMI, and Modex. Very excited to have our sponsors and good to have you listeners with us. All of our participants are here in the podcast regulars. We have a lot to talk about as there's a lot of developments going on. But let's get out to the MBA and get the MBA Mortgage Minute.
Hi, I'm Adam DeSanctis. This is the Mortgage Minute, the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. Last week, MBA submitted comments to FHFA in response to its RFI on Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac's single-family pricing framework. MBA's recommendations to FHFA and the GSEs are intended to improve elements of the pricing framework related to return on capital, implementation, and collaboration to the Enterprise Regulatory Capital Framework. Our letter highlighted our long-standing advocacy for utility-style returns for the GSEs while ensuring a level playing field and allowing for flexibility within that rate of return for different products. We also recommended regular reviews of the GSEs' pricing framework and enhance engagement with the industry to determine appropriate implementation timelines and to avoid potential operational or implementation issues. We also noted that the Enterprise Regulatory Capital Framework in its current state is not an accurate reflection of the GSEs' risk for a variety of reasons and can be problematic when directly used to make pricing decisions. Instead, GSEs should be granted flexibility to use methods other than pricing to manage certain risks, and in the longer term, MBA recommended FHFA consider further revisions to the Enterprise Regulatory Capital Framework to improve effectiveness and transparency. MBA will work closely with FHFA on such reviews and any other related matters that arise from this RFI. And finally, have you registered yet for MBA's annual convention and expo? We hope to see you in the City of Brotherly Love, Philadelphia, from October 15th through the 18th. Register today at mba.org/annual. That's it for this week. Thank you for listening.
Good job, Adam DeSantis. Thank you so much for being here and bringing us that report. Appreciate the MBA. And if you're not signed up for Mortgage Action Alliance, I recommend you do so. You can have your voice heard on the Hill. Let's get over to Les Parker, and we're going to talk to Les live in just a minute, but let's get over to Les Parker with the TIEB Spotlight and what he has for us today. Again, there's so much going on in the markets, and we can't wait to get Les's perspective. Here is Les Parker's Hot Topic report today.
TM Spotlight Soundbites is brought to you by PowerSeller, making hedging easy.
Day to stone you when you're trying to lock a loan. Then day to stone you when you're keeping all your loans. But you would not feel so all alone. Everybody will get stoned.
The bond bears rain. How can they take mortgage rates to 8%?
They throw stones.
They cast the five stones of the top growing states.
Florida, Texas, North Carolina, Georgia, and Tennessee with low taxes and regulations. Bond supply is a weighty stone. Keynesians love record debt and spending. The bears also cast the Fed policy stone. Higher for longer, the forward Fed funds rate projects 4.20 in January 25.
Everybody will get stoned.
These views are mine. See the dying stones at tmspotlight.com.
Les Parker, appreciate that so much. We got him live. We're going to come to him in just a minute, but I want to get Matt Graham's. Be sure to sign up for Les Parker's TM newsletter. You can get the paid version for free by going to tmspotlight.com. When you sign up, you'll see a code. You can put in the word power for Power Seller to get a great newsletter that is a must read for our industry. You can listen to it and get so much information on what's going on in the markets on a macro basis. All right, let's get over to Matt Graham. He is here live with us. Matt, good to have you here, friend. Appreciate you being here. What do you have for us today? I'm looking at this as not a good day for the markets, Matt. Not really.
Good day, week, month, year.
Yeah.
Things aren't good, and things are getting frustrating for the average fan of rate commentary or bond market commentary, because things aren't necessarily as logical as we might like them to be. And the cries of what the hell is causing this drama are running rampant right now. And it's both complex and simple at the same time. There are a couple complicated reasons, a couple simple reasons. But the reality is that in a general sense, the bond market is undergoing a repricing. And we use the term repricing to refer to lender reprices on MBS Live, but then it also has that broader context of those moments in time where rates know they need to get somewhere and they're not going to be able to go there all at once. But as they make daily progress, maybe it's two steps forward, one step back, or four steps up and half a step down, we slowly but surely get to these levels unless acted upon by another force. Right now, those other forces aren't really doing much acting, so we're getting what we get in terms of this relentless pressure toward higher rates. So why is it happening? And it seems like a surprise to some people, and it certainly is. It's a surprise to many bond analysts even, who expected to see 4.25 or 4.3% put up more of a fight in terms of 10-year yields and ceiling potential from a technical standpoint. But the reality is that that may have been the case. We may have seen some support there if it weren't for a confluence of a few factors that maybe were unexpected. And those include things that we talked about last week and continue to be problems this week: foreign central bank selling in Japan and China in order to defend currency valuations, and things that are really logical in the bigger picture and relative to what the Fed's been saying, simply economic data. We don't have new economic data today or even last Friday driving things, but we have fresh in our minds the retail sales report that was much higher than expected, other economic reports that continue to suggest the market just hasn't, or the economy just hasn't seen enough damage for the Fed to want to back down on its higher for longer policy. the other issue here is that the Fed is transmitting policy via the length of time that it's going to hold short-term rates at a ceiling. It might end up hiking if data were to get even stronger, but it doesn't necessarily need to hike anymore at this point. Powell has said that policy is restrictive, and so they're going to transmit that policy via the length of time that they hold rates at the ceiling. That means that as the market needs to adjust to fluctuations in the rate outlook, it has to do so primarily in the longer end of the yield curve, and that has made for this bear steepening that everybody's talking about recently. And all that means is that there's more volatility and more upward potential for longer term rates like 10-year yields and mortgages when econ data or other factors suggest that the bond market should do some selling. What changes this? It's going to take data. Some people were saying, hey, I thought we were data dependent. We didn't have any data last week and now rates are going higher. So what's up with that? Rates are on a glacial pace in terms of momentum heading higher. And there's momentum behind that, right? Like a big glacier. And it's going to take new data to stop that. So it's a process that's in motion. That's what people need to understand. It's a process that's in motion. It's the path of least resistance right now, even though it seems to some people they might think it's stupid how high rates are going. But we need to have data that pushes back in the other direction to stop things, or some other event like the banking crisis or the mini banking crisis in March, where it looked like things might be breaking. Stuff like that can certainly push back in the other direction. But we need data, and we need maybe some clarity from Powell on this new debate on R star, or the neutral rate of return, the rate that the Fed thinks will create a perfect homeostasis between growth and inflation at sustainable levels. And there's been talk recently about that theoretical rate moving higher. And by talk among the journalistic and analytical communities, not amongst Fed themselves, because they've said there is not talk of that. And if Powell were to reinforce that this Friday at Jackson Hole, that might be a little bit helpful. And if he were to reinforce the inflation target, that I don't know if that would hurt or help, but in any event, the market would like clarity on that. I think it might actually hurt if he reinforced that, but who knows at this point. We need the data. We need people to start losing their jobs and things to be bad. You know what I mean?
It's a sick world we live in, the mortgage side. We want to have, in order to get better rates, we got to have bad news and people going through difficulties. And that's that.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, the data, there's no data and we're still having rates rising. You raise a really good point on that. Very curious.
Yep. Yeah, definitely that the glacier is moving.
The glacier is moving. We got Les Parker dialed in here. So Les, if you could come on, love to get your perspective. Good to have you joining in, Les.
I don't know how much perspective I have, but I have a question for Matt. I would like to know, what's the liquidity looking like in sevens and even seven and a halves?
Oh, very poor. I heard seven and a half were four trades on Thursday or something like that. So seven's a little bit better. I don't have exact numbers for you, but just the same way it was when we were on the way up at lower rates, these frontier coupons are slow to thaw, but we can divine their prices by extrapolating them from six and a halves and sixes. And that's, I think, more of what's going on right now, although I think sevens are rapidly needing to get more liquid based on the rates that are going out the door.
There certainly seems to be market consensus that if I buy a seven with any premium, that premium is going to disappear.
Yep.
So that's one reason why it's constrained. What do you think about, you mentioned Powell speaking Friday. I know I've gotten a number of different mortgage bankers asking, what's happening with Jay's speech? Will this move the market? Well, the Fed's policy, I think, is set in stone. Yeah. There's really not going to be any change in that. The only thing data can maybe shrink this long-term extension. Doesn't that kind of imply that this will be a non-event on Friday? What do you think?
Yeah, I'm more in the non-event camp. And I like to always put out a disclaimer that you never know if the Fed or Powell at a speech might say something that the market takes and runs with it. But I think my baseline is that what can he say that hasn't already been said in the most recent press conference and other Fed communications? I think it's been pretty clear.
Yeah, I think the market is absolutely subject to liquidity events. And I think we could have some liquidity events, not just in the United States, but in China and maybe other places. They, obviously, you've commented a few times on the property developers in China. They still are having issues. And even today, the Wall Street Journal came out with, I think it was Wall Street Journal, may have been the Financial Times, I don't remember. But they were coming out with that China's in a difficult situation. It was Financial Times. And their situation is, these are neo-Keynesians that I'm reading. So they think China must start to stimulate its economy. Otherwise, it's not going to get out of this and will continue to be a drag on the global economy. And of course, it could be sending out deflation to the world. Do you have any thoughts or reflections on that?
None that are educated enough to matter to anybody. I'm not really an expert on that, and maybe a little bit of a default sort of skeptic when it comes to China as a driver of big picture change for U.S. rates. I know that to the global economy, it's consequential. And then I think to the U.S. economy, people think that there's maybe more of a correlation than there is when it comes to a slower, weaker China causing a slowdown in the U.S. economy. I do think, as you said, it is more likely that it helps to cause deflation via exports. But then the question comes up of how much have we done? Have we really done? And I have no idea when I ask this question, but how much have we really done in the last 2 years to in the onshoring movement to bring manufacturing either back home or away from China, given the supply chain issues that cropped up after COVID?
My last comment, and then I will have to sign off, Dave, is concerning locks. I know that mortgage bankers are talking, and loan officers for that matter, but it's more happening at the cap markets area. They're wondering whether the new apps that are coming in, these apps are floating, they are not locking in, and they look at it, their pipeline is full of phantom loans. Not that they're not real, they really are applications. However, will they actually become a closing if they don't lock?
Right.
So that's what I think there is a major concern there. It's by the way, it happened before in the market in recent times in 2019, the second half of 2019, early 2017, was we had this rapid run up in rates, and they were just getting apps, but they didn't actually materialize into closing. So a phantom pipeline. David may even want to chime in on that, Dave, when have a chance, but I have to sign off. I'll listen to what you guys have to say. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. I really appreciate that. I'd like to get the rest of the participants on the podcast jumping in on this. Mark, David Kittle joining in, Alice joining in on this. Alan, when you look at where rates are at right now, I'm really looking at a lot of the predictions, unless if there's less already. I think he already jumped out. Oh, no, you're still here, Les. If you could just jump quickly comment about the prediction of rates falling this year. That has come up a lot. Several clients' calls I had earlier.
Sure. I can give you a quick, real quick on that. Right now, we're in a bear market.
We're in a bear market.
So until we change that, you can't be too bullish. However, my six-month outlook, I see significant drop in rates. Obviously, UWM also thinks that since they're staffing up to be able to hit this mini refi boom that might be, and that also is creating the problem with trying to get liquidity in sevens and seven and a half. So you're in the industry itself is creating some interesting dynamics going on. Additionally, what we see is mortgage companies are thinking, oh, they're holding on to way too many employees. We're only off on the employment by, call it 20%, maybe I think it's around 20%, and yet production's off 50%. Well, right. That's a huge gap. I still see this big bull market coming for the going into the end of the year, maybe into the first quarter, but that's because I see a recession coming, and I also see liquidity crisis in the banking system in the United States, and I see other liquidity crisis happening in Europe. And I think China is going to be exporting more deflation. That's my reasoning, but we are in a bear market. So until it really changes the technicals, and as Matt and I both are, we're a good duet right now. We need data, and we just don't have enough data right now. The little tiny signs show that inflation is easing, but you need more than that. And then there's others that really look at employment data. You want to talk about a lagging indicator. Almost every dimension of employment's lagging indicators. So I don't see how rates increase significantly from the levels we're at, 25 beeps or so. Okay. But I do see more of a risk for a significant drop in rates.
And the BRICS nations, if they release a currency, if they in fact do that, I don't know exactly where that's at, but I know something's coming up here pretty quickly on the BRICS nations on the recent...
See it yet in the indexes for the emerging markets and how the dollar trades against those. And I also don't see it in the dollar index against the major indicators. That is, as I've put in my newsletter the last few years on my annual forecast, that is the big issue. The single biggest issue facing monetary policy, fiscal policy, and for a subset, mortgage rates is, does the U.S. dollar remain the reserve currency? It is still the reserve currency. It needs to be dropped by about, if you consider its level around 60%, it needs to get down near below 50 and approaching 40% of all transactions globally. If you get in that area, rates in the United States, is everyone sitting down, will significantly rise because it is us being the reserve currency and an irresponsible reserve currency by that because of our fiscal policy. Because of that, we are getting significant subsidies in our rates when we no longer are the reserve currency, but one of, then rates will be significantly higher in the United States. So a mortgage rate of 7 is going to look really attractive because we'll probably be in the 9s.
Wow. That is interesting. I know that's getting a lot of attention on a lot of the podcasts of financial networks. Les Parker, thanks for sticking around a little longer than you probably would like to have. I'll let you go on to your call. Appreciate it. Matt, any final thoughts on what he was talking about? Les?
No, it's hard to argue with pretty much all that. I think you did a great job.
Yeah, good job. Matt Graham, thank you so much for being here. If you want to sign up for Matt Graham's amazing MBS Live system, go to mbslive.net and go there and you put in the code LOL when signing up. You'll get an extended trial period without the need of a credit card. But come on, this is so affordable and it's so critical that you have this tool and have this information on your screen and all your devices. I leave, go lunch. I take it with my iPad. I have it on my iPad. I take a look at what's going on my iPhone, no matter where I'm at. I have this up. I go to a meeting offsite, go to a lot of board meetings. I have this on my iPad. It is just such a powerful tool and you need it. Get signed up. You can do the trial code if you want, but just get signed up. So good. Matt, good. Thank you for being here. Appreciate you so much.
You bet.
Let's move over to our good buddy, David Kittle, who's in the room with us, and Mark Helm and Alice will get, I did get you guys a feedback on the interest rates. Let's go back to that before we move on. Mark and David, any thoughts on interest rates? Alice, start with you, Mark.
Not necessarily interest rates, but something about markets. I participated recently in a Board of Realtors function and got really educated about something, and I thought it was interesting. I'd share with the group. It seems like I have my own home, a high-end home for sale, hadn't had any traction on it, and I found out that it's not just me. That's the whole market here in Houston. The high-end loans, properties aren't moving because people don't want to take on those payments on those high-end where interest rates are today. And then I had conversations with David, a mutual client of ours, and with another client that is specialty lending on VA, and you might know who one of those is. And their business is going great guns right now because they have clients coming to them say, I never thought I'd use my VA, but it's better than going the conventional route right now because I can borrow more money. And then the same thing is happening. And I had a conversation with two companies that specialize in FHA lending, and their business is starting to really pick up in great guns. So now you're seeing the borrowers out there compensated for the higher rates that they have by putting less money in their property by going the VA and FHA route. So I think the rates affect a lot more than we think about traditionally. And I think we're starting to see that in the marketplace with home selling nowadays and how it's affecting those sales and the financing of those sales.
Yeah, very good. Mr. Kittle, thoughts?
Boy, a lot to unpack on this one so far today, David. How about if I just go off on one little tangent since we're having so much negative news about rates and everything, and in today's MBA news link that they put out, IMBs are only losing second quarter about $534 alone compared to the first quarter of $1,972 yeah. alone. Yeah. So they're improving. We got $1,400 alone. That's still a loss, but that's certainly a substantial leap there. And it's still costing, always will blow me away, $11,000 to produce a loan today. And we still got to look at that.
Yeah, I think it's up to 13,000 with the latest, unless it got readjusted again just recently, but I think it was up to 13.
No, it's being adjusted down per the report today from 13 to 11.
Oh, yeah. So it's okay. So it is going back down. All right. So we are actually. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
So that's good. But the interest rates. Look, the less says they're going to fall. Next year is an election year. And I've said that many times on your show. I don't know if they're going to fall to his prediction the first quarter of 24. I think that's a little premature. I don't think the Fed's got much more gumption to move up. I hope not. There's a lot of negativity once you cross 7%. And that's where we are today. Inflation, whether it was you or maybe Matt that said we've been getting improving inflation numbers. That data is, it lags, right? 30 to 60 days in some cases. Gas prices are up over 75 cents a gallon over the last couple of weeks. And that's not in the data yet. And people are absolutely not happy about that because that hits them in the pocket.
Mm-hmm. Especially with the push to go back to the office. So you start driving again. Start paying those gas prices, it's going to have an impact without question. Yeah.
But it's above $4 a gallon here in Louisville. It's $6.30 to $6.50 a gallon in California. It's ridiculous. We have no energy policy, right? Because they want to kill the oil production. That's their quote. And really, this administration has no housing policy to speak of. All right. So it's a conundrum right now.
It is. That is. Alice, any comments you want to add to this discussion on rates?
All I can say is I'm parked across a trampoline park, and I'm feeling like that's what this is.
That's okay.
Stop it down. You're just jumping, right?
That is good.
That seemed to line up, but. Anyway, I did want to compliment Matt on his commentary, and of course, Les too, because I take a lot of notes when they both talk because I love the analogies that they draw. The glacier analogy was a good one because I think the way Matt and Les communicate this gives all of us a way to communicate it to others. These are hard topics to talk about if you're a loan officer, and so I just would tell everybody, take lots of notes, keep listening, because you can trust what they're saying as things that you can relay to others that really walk a careful line without being overly optimistic or overly pessimistic. That's one of the things I really like about Matt's commentary. So just my two cents on that.
Yeah, man.
That made my whole day, Alice. Thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome.
It's true, Matt. You just have a great way of delivering it. And it's, you got that fried, who is the Dragnet, wasn't it? Dragnet and Sergeant Friday was nothing but the facts, bam. You just come across with that kind of approach to it. It's really good. I like Les getting out there, but I love the dialogue between the two of you. And I just love the respect that you have for each other, even though you're taking it. And oftentimes we'll take different perspectives on it. You guys do a great job. Thank you, Alex.
Yeah, Batman and Robin don't always fight the bad guys in the same way, but they get the job done.
Get the job done. There you go, Batman and Robin. I love it.
Holy, that's higher rates, Les.
Holy, higher rates. So good. Perfect.
That's hilarious.
That is hilarious, Alice. But I think it's right up there with you. I parked across from a trampoline park and I'm watching it. That's pretty hilarious too. Alan, any commentary you want to jump in on the rate discussion? I want to make sure we get your commentary out there in Florida.
Yeah, it's very important to be using the right technology. One, to have lower costs, but two is to make sure that you're using all the necessary tools so you can be a Batman and Robin and fight the bad guys and give borrowers access to homeownership.
Yep. Costs go up, costs go down. Back to the trampoline analogy. Yep, I agree. Good job. Thank you so much. Let's get over. First of all, I thank you all for participating in that discussion. Let's get over to Mr. Kittle about, I have some things I want to talk about. You already touched on some important points, David, related to costs and where the MBA's news leak. Is there anything else that you had? Because I have something I want to talk about related to where we're going, I think, as an industry.
No, go ahead, David. Let's jump into it.
Just before we got on the podcast today and recording this today, I was on with some of the top realtors in the nation, and we're preparing for the upcoming podcast that I'll be recording, Mark, and I'll be recording here in hopefully next week, where we're talking and getting a perspective about the seller side of the commission. It's interesting. More and more MLSs are capitulating to what's going on. Now, capitulating isn't like that they're being sued, but there's more and more evidence that National Association of Realtors, NAR, is going to be losing this battle. Not only that, DOJ, I didn't realize this came out in the discussion, DOJ has a major action against the NAR as well. And there just seems to be a piling on of actions against National Association of Realtors. So as a result, the MLSs, the multiple listing services are across the nation, are one by one going, we're not going to get implicated with this group. We're going to capitulate. We're going to say it's okay. Work it out. Like one of the examples they gave is up in the Pacific Northwest, the Seattle area. Up there in the Northwest, they kept saying just the Northwest, Pacific Northwest, is Washington State. They completely gone over and it hasn't had any big effect on it. So now, if the DOJ comes in and issues damages and that it's significant, one major real estate firm, which is located here in Austin, Texas, you can figure out who I'm talking about. The president spoke last week to all of his 7,000 agents that were in town for their annual conference and says, I'm looking at $21 million worth of lawsuits on my desk right now, depending on how this goes. Anyone who's in the real estate industry is assuming this is we're going to continue on as it has been since 1908. There's going to be a buyer commission and a seller's commission. It's all paid out of the sale proceeds, and basically the seller's paying that. That appears not to be the case. And anyone who's holding on to that. Now, what are the opportunities that come from this? That's where this discussion gets really interesting. And that's why we're going to be having a podcast. I wish I could quote some of the things that we just heard, but folks, stay tuned to this podcast and what we're doing. But I want to throw that around to different ones, starting with you, Mr. Kittle, and then go to you, Matt, if you've heard anything on this, then over to Mark and Alice, talking about the Real Estate Commission. Any updates that you've heard that you want to share with our audience?
So let me jump in. All right. So you're framing this as though the standard is 7 to 6%, 5%, whatever it is. It has always been paid by the seller, comes out of the proceeds. And what you're saying is the lawsuit says can't do that anymore. Is that
what? Right. That's right. Right?
So part of it has to be paid by the buyer. Is that where this is going?
So well, the buyer's. That's where it goes. But the assumption where everyone's logic goes is the half that's not going to get paid by the seller is going to have to get paid by the buyer. How many buyers could be paying 3%, 2.5% to 3%?
Well, they're not. 3.5%. I'll take you back.
They're not.
Let me take you back to the days 40 years ago. Discount points were on loans, yield adjustments. We used to have 8, 9, 10, 12 discount points back when rates were at 13 or 14%. Seller had to pay that. What did they do? Have to raise the price of the house to cover it. The only way I'm going to pay it as a buyer, if I don't have the cash to buy anyway, it's going to drive up costs. It's going to inflate values of homes if this happens. That's my initial response to this, David, because a buyer's not going to come in and pay an additional on a $500,000 home. They're not going to pay three points or 2 points to buy that house in addition to their down payment. My first blush is no go.
No go. Yeah. Mark,
if I frame that correctly off what you told me, I don't know how this floats.
That's what I have some comments I'm going to add to the end, but I want to get everyone's input, David, because I'll just get everyone's input, then I'll share my some thoughts at the end. Mark, any updates for this topic?
I think Mr. Kittle has a couple good points there, but I will add on to that. I see a world, if that lawsuit goes through, I see a world where the market is going to go through a crippling phase for quite some time, because I agree that the buyer is not going to want to pay those additional funds. And right. we might have developed a real estate economy in this country where the real estate agents only get compensated on buying properties and representing the person buying the properties rather than the people that are selling the properties. And that's been one of the recruitment things a long time with real estate is, if you get a property listed, sometimes you can sit back and do nothing and make 3%. So that's one of the things I think is happening. But David, I still keep hearing from major real estate agents in different areas of the country, they do not think that this litigation is going to go negative against them. And then we're hearing, you and I are hearing, that it is. So yeah, I don't know where it falls right now. Yeah. There must be somebody just living in a dream world.
I'm going to remind me to talk about the guy I had lunch with last week, who's got his master's degree studying this very topic. He did his master's thesis on the selling commission, and does it involve steering? Very interesting results. I'll share that in just a minute, but let's get over. Alice, any thoughts? Have you heard anything up in your neck of the woods, or is this being talked about inside a Union Home at all?
I haven't heard anything specifically as to which way this may be going, but I will say that the National Association of Realtors has a very large PAC, right? They're very influential, but this is a court case, not something mm-hmm. where you can twist congressmen's arms on. Those who are overly optimistic may be just thinking of typical NAR trends. This is a whole different ballgame. When you've got to have your legal ducks in a row on this. So it'll be interesting. There'll be fallout somewhere, and there will be a lot of people who are impacted who have this as a part-time job and have to rethink. And to Mark's point, I remember my very first job was working for a real estate agent, and they always said, list to live. That was their line.
List to live. That's exactly where I think we're going back
to.
List
to live.
Yeah. List to live. Alan, any thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with everybody else. I think there's more to see here, but at the end of the day, we have to make sure, and I say we, I just mean globally as an industry, we don't affect borrowers' ability to get into a home. It's hard enough that no matter what you think, inflation's up. I just saw something the other day that the price of daycare is up 6% when inflation's only up 3%. Things, the cost of things are up, and if we scare borrowers away, we're just going to do more damage. So we've got to work very carefully, depending on whatever that becomes, that we find ways to help borrowers understand the home process. And that comes with education. It comes with coaching. It comes with mentoring, all those things that we don't always do the best job at.
Yep. So let me give my commentary, what I picked up. Number one, Clayton Collins called me, good friend, and called me, says, hey, we got some real influential people. Would you like to join us at this lunch? I said, yeah, I can make it. I'll drive in. So I went and made it for an early lunch last week. And one of the individuals there just got his master's degree and completed a study on the real estate commission. And it had to do with steering. Does someone who is, if the seller is paying for that, does this in effect bring about some steering? In other words, you show certain properties, you don't show other periods. So not steering into a loan product, but steering in a sense, certain properties in certain areas gets shown more than others. And he says, the evidence is overwhelming. That has been going on and going on for a long time. And if that element gets introduced, again, everything will go the way of the consumer and what is in the best interest of the consumer. And so if, in fact, that shows up, there has been some level of steering by realtor agencies away from certain properties that might have a better price, worse areas or whatever. You steer away from certain areas or certain prices and you show others, that is going to be very problematic. And that appears going to get introduced into this lawsuit. So there is many elements about this. Here's what I'm hearing from lenders that are looking at this is, what if this does go through and the seller is not going to be paying the selling commission. In other words, the person selling the home will not be covering that part of the cost. More and more lenders are looking at, I wonder if this creates an opportunity for us to be hiring those realtors that used to sell the homes to start working with us inside of the lending institutions. More and more are looking at that, folks. The only reason we bring this up, listeners, is number one, get you thinking, get you asking questions. What this program is about is not to try to solve any issues. We try to solve them. We'll try to be as factual as we can, but we are more interested in sharing with you the critical thought that goes into these things, and we'll keep you updated. We are preparing a podcast on this very important topic. And let me tell you, this could be tectonic shift They just had a 5.1 earthquake last night in on top of all the rain out in California. This was going to be much bigger in magnitude if we do have this, because it's going to shake in a major way what's going to go on. That is for sure. How it's going to fall out, where it's going to go, we shall find out. Before we go over to Dallas, I want to play the iEmergent ad, and we will do that at this point.
Thanks, David. We've learned that iEmergent's purchase mortgage forecasts give lenders geo-targeting capabilities by neighborhood or census tract. But the platform can also reveal loan officer productivity with the same incredible granularity and accuracy. Instead of national, state, or even county-level data, Mortgage Market Smart can show which licensed loan officers are doing the most business in each individual census tract, allowing lenders to recruit the best talent in the hotspots they're trying to reach. This functionality is absolutely unique to iEmergent, David.
Alice Alvey, good to have you here with us today. Appreciate you being here each and every week. If you could give us an update, any legislation that's caught your attention that we should be paying attention to?
I think the biggest thing is not in legislation, but in a proposed rule. So, boy, after all the discussion we've had today, my stuff feels rather small on the radar, but I'll go ahead with it anyway.
Yes, please.
We've got the quality control standards for AVMs. The comment period closes today. I did send a link over to Lickin' on Lending. Hopefully, Dave, you guys get a chance to post that. But if not, you all have the ability to surf to the Federal Register, quality control standards for AVMs, and post your comment. The only thing you need to do is say, I support MBA's comments. Only 24 people have commented on this so far. And there is a big component in here that again, we're just at the proposed rule stage, but this is the time to get voices heard is early, right? So many times we wait until the 11th hour and decide we don't like something. Now is the time to get in early to say that we don't know what's in the black box as a lender. I have no idea how Fannie and Freddie, DU and LCA work or any of the other AVM models that are out there. And I don't have the ability to have a proper QC testing process that could assess if there's any bias in the appraisal. So the key component is to add this fifth pillar within QC tests for AVMs that adds that we should be checking for bias. Is there any systemic bias? As a lender, we each only have our own data. We don't know everyone's data. And there's a lot of flaws in this approach. And they're asking the question. So this is the stage where ask and we give the answers of this needs a lot more work and should not be focused on lenders QCing the vendors at this level when we can't see behind the curtain. So just, you don't have to get into too much detail, but just post, support the comments from MBA. You can also look up MBA's letter there. And then one last tip is the FHA did publish a new handbook about a week ago. I think it was on the 8th. Not a whole heck of a lot of changes. There is, if you open the PDF version, you can just glance through everything that's been highlighted. Most of it has just been text clarification. But there are a couple things that are a little trippy, I call it, in the words, where if you were a lender who did something in a certain way, that this slight change in the words from your underwriting procedures might make a difference. So take a look and check out foreign income, how you were handling flood insurance and real estate tax abatements, and then transferring existing appraisals. There's about 10 items, but these were the big four, I think, that for some companies on how I remember they used to operate, might have some things they want to check out with those. So that's my 2 cents for today, Dave. I'll kick it back to you.
Thank you so much, Alice. Still thinking of you parked across from the trampoline center and how the market's going. That's a good metaphor. Good job. Thank you so much, Alice. You want to go listen to all of Alice's commentary, go to our website. And you can download each one of her segments and each week that she delivers. Of course, you can do that for everyone on the podcast. And it really allows you to zero in on some of the specifics, especially with all that she's talking about. You have to take notes. Alice talks about she takes notes. And when Matt and Les are talking, I'm taking notes like madly taking notes when she's talking. And that's a way you can just listen and go back and get the notes from you, from the website up there. So go check that out. We're also going to be converting all of those into text and very shortly. And then one of the things we're going to be doing, so not only can you read it, but you can download and share that by text as well. So that's some exciting things we're continuing to do to make this information more shareable here on the podcast. Thank you, Alice. Appreciate it. Alan Pollock is here with another good joke? Do we have a good joke today, Alan Pollock? Or do we, are we listening to one of those? Oh, groaning jokes.
I could sneak a, about a shower thought.
A shower thought.
Yeah, I could sneak one of those in for you. Let's see. Why is bacon called bacon and cookies called cookies when you cook bacon and bake cookies?
Okay. That's something to ponder.
There you go.
There you go. Okay. You got what?
It's a ponder. All right. Let's get into the fun stuff.
Oh, ponder. Good. All right. Fun stuff.
All right. So I thought this was pretty interesting. The power of the internet and Google Maps and the ability to create communities. Gig workers, which we all know what those are, right? We're trying to get them into homes. Gig workers are tracking customers who reduce tips after delivery by marking their phones on Google Maps. So in other words, people that work for Instacart, after they do a delivery and they don't get a good tip or the tip's been lowered, they go on Google Maps and they're creating a community where they're tagging all these homes so other people know about it and can choose not to deliver to them. Yeah, it's great. Yeah, it's called tip baiter, like bait, B-A-I-T-E-R. And after a formal complaint was made, Google Maps has been starting to remove them. I don't know what's going to happen, but whoever I stole this article from online said that they reached out to Google, but there was no comment. So very interesting, but the power of the internet and the gig workers. David, I don't know if you remember, but back in the 90s, the Jetsons really did predict our future. I've got a really cool image here. It has four boxes and it says, it shows four things. And the first was Zoom meetings with George Jetson staring into a screen looking at his boss. Online classes, which was Judy doing aerobic classes through the TV online at her home. Teladoc. And then the last one was FaceTime. That's right. So the Jetsons clearly predicted our future.
I'm still waiting for the flying car. That's the thing I want. Yeah.
It's out there. Some people have put their own money into making drones that fly and all this other stuff.
Let's
get into the mortgage stuff.
Get to the mortgage stuff. Yes.
All right. PMI Rate Pro. Some of you know them. Some of you don't. They are a tech company. They're hyper-focused on PMI. Just like we have on the pricing side, there is no platform that takes all of the PMI data across all, I think they're doing five companies right now, and doing a best X display. They're integrated with different platforms. They're talking to different people. They're agnostic standalone MI platform. So check them out. They've got some new stuff that they put out, but I didn't get a chance to grab all the details. PMI Rate Pro. The other one I saw, this was interesting. New data from Maxwell. They're the point of sale platform. Many of us know them. Actually, I think TMC is partnered with them. An exclusive look at home buyer groups and taking on higher rates head on. And what they're saying is the share of 18 to 24-year-old borrowers has increased by 18% year over year. So clearly, the ways that we communicate and market and try and create relationships, 18 to 24-year-old buyers are increasing 18% a year. 18% is a lot. And we clearly need to do education. So I mentioned that just because of all the technology and the automation and the marketing and the ways that we look to attain new customers. Keep an eye on that younger generation that's coming up. David, LenderPrice, they are a pricing engine in our industry. This is a big deal. I saw this and at first I glanced over it. I was like, I'm really not going to talk about it. But after reading it, so LenderPrice introduced what they call composable pricing UI. It's an interface you as a lender.
Could you repeat that one more time? You said that.
Composable pricing UI. Think of it as composing music, right? Mm-hmm. Orchestrating. And it's an innovative user interface that empowers lenders to effortlessly customize their pricing engine using ready, no code or low code. So what that basically means is they're giving you control, which many pricing engines do today, but it sounds like they're adding another layer on top of that to automatically change a lot of the things you have to contact the sales and support staffs for. It doesn't mean you want to do that, right? Those support staffs that work at pricing engines are there for a reason. They know the guidelines and they understand how it all comes together. But there's certain overlays either secondary market likes to do, or you just need to move with the market as quick and strategic as the market moves. Anyways, LenderPrice just put that out. If you're interested, go check it out. I thought that was really cool. And then David, the last thing I'm going to touch on today was an article I saw at ftadvisors.com, which is the Financial Times Advisors. It's called Tech Culture and How to Maintain a Good Culture for Your Technology Employees. I'm not going to go through the list. If anybody's really interested, we could talk about it more next week. But there was two things on this list I thought were, it was a big list that were really interesting. When you have a tech team and you invest in technology, they're investing in how things work, right? They're investing behind the scenes. They're investing in making things work. To lose them sometimes is a big hit. You went through all this trouble to get them trained and to get all this tech. So the biggest thing is encourage collaboration. A lot of times tech folks like to go off in the corner, right? Sometimes they prefer the dark room with the Coke machine and the neon lights, or the, I shouldn't say neon, but the other lights. Anyways, the goal is encourage them to collaborate, create small teams. The article talks a little bit about that. You want to check that out. And then the other thing it talks about to continue to attain and hold on to those folks is actually be open to use new tools. Allow for them to give you feedback and be open that they may have a good way that you can better collaborate or automate your workflow. There's a lot more in the article. You can check it out. It's ftadvisors.com. And I highly recommend to read it if you're looking to figure out how to better create relationship and sustain your tech folks. That's all for today, David.
Good, good. Have you heard, I was going to share this. One of the things that I was so impressed when Bill Cosgrove hired Alice is he honored her by creating a Ask Alice. We've talked about it on the podcast, the knowledge base you could add. And I'm not sure which tool they use, technology they use, they may have created in-house, but there's a product called ingestai.io, ingestai.io. And it allows you to do that. So what we're going to be doing here at Lickin' on Lending, and again, with Transformational Mortgage Solutions, the consulting firm, is we're taking all of the conversations we've recorded, all the podcasts we recorded, we're dumping it in Ingest AI, and you can search any topic and we'll be able to bring up the various features. We're going to try to make, we're going to get it.
That's correct.
So we'll put it in there and make it work. But I want to encourage our listeners, if you're working at a company and you're looking to go, I wish I could look that up. Why do I have to make this phone call? Do what our friends up there at Union Home did, is created a system called Ask Alice. And it is ability to ask a knowledge base, I guess is the best way to say it, that's been gathered. And you query that with a normal standard language, just like you would a Google search, and it brings back answers. It's just amazing what that could do for a company. Alice, that has worked. Is this still, I should ask that as a question, is it still working as well for you guys up there? And is that database still growing like crazy?
Oh yeah, it's amazing. So the system manages over 3,000 answers in a week in the mortgage space. So if you can imagine, that's how many people are getting answers right on their loans, are not having to call the underwriter or the processor to get an answer. And then they're getting a company specific answer as well. So, and then they have all of the guidelines. So yeah, it really is a time saver, but it is an investment, to your point earlier, to have Bill's commitment. Yeah.
Yeah. The Bills have Bill's commitment to put this all together. It was just fascinating. I thought it fit well inside of this topic right here. We're talking about technology. Check out Ingest, ingestai.io, and you'll look it up and you'll see it. It's pretty amazing what it can do. So Alan, so good to have you here.
Hey, David. I'm ready with a couple comments. I look forward to the opportunity to close this out today. And I think you've created a perfect lead in for me. I just want to talk to everybody about learning in our industry. You might think everything, but you don't. You might think there's not anything you can learn, but there is. And what I recommend you do is look at what's happening this fall in our industry. We've got the Mortgage Collaborative Conference. We've got the Mortgage Bankers Association. We've got Housing Wire. We got Lenders One, we got the Reverse Mortgage Normala Convention. We've got all these conferences going on where you don't have to be a member to go to these conferences. They have a non-member rate where you can go and mingle with people and learn, not counting all our fabulous sponsors that we have products are having ongoing conferences that you can go and decide whether their product is a good replacement for what you have or something you want to have. In a time when our industry is slow, take advantage of what's being offered out there for you to become more educated on products and people and processes so that you can improve your business. I guarantee you every dollar you spend, you'll get multiple dollars back on it because we've got some fabulous people out there to learn from and some great conferences to attend. I, for one, am now signed up for 4 conferences this fall, and I've been in this business a long time. And if I think I can still go and learn something, I know you can go and learn something. So I encourage everybody to go partake and learn because the business you save may be your own.
So good, Mark. Good. A lot of wisdom there. I think it's so important. You and I talk about this all the time. Continue to be a student of the industry. You've been at this 48 years. I've been at 50 years. Like you and I say, Mark, we get on these podcasts, we do interviews. We're the ones learning so much. I just love
that. That's right.
And I'm thinking of the interview we did with Kat. Kat just wrote me again about the student loan. If you guys haven't listened to that podcast, we could go on and on. We're releasing some this week that I didn't talk about earlier that we should, I'll make quick mention of today. Upcoming is August 23rd. By the way, August 24th is my birthday. Wish me happy birthday. But hey, August 23rd on Wednesday this week, James Robert Lay, you have Digital Growth Institute. This is a must listen to podcast. James Robert is one of those, JR is just one of these amazing people. Mark and I interviewed him, and he has a topic, banking on digital growth. There's so much packed into that one interview that you're going to not want to miss it. So get to listen to him. Last week, we released the one with Clayton Collins at Housing Wire Media with really well to understanding the investment side of Clayton Collins's brain. It was really interesting. Encourage you guys to go back and listen to that if you haven't already done so. Listeners, it's so good to have you here. Grateful to have you participating with us and sharing this podcast. It is growing like crazy in the marketplace. I've got more and more people reaching out. There's just so many great podcasts. We just recorded one last week with Chase, the JP Morgan Chase on their correspondent side on their community lending program. That's going to be released shortly. That's a must listen to. We've got more and more coming out that are just, you can listen and stay up on what's happening. Folks, good to have you here with us. Have a great week and look forward to having you back here next week.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week and thanks for listening.